Joe Biden's running mate in the 2020 election will be Kamala Harris, a black woman who holds the distinction of being only the second African-American woman to be elected to the Senate and the first South Asian-American senator in U.S. history. Her selection to be vice president is historic in many ways, and she stands as only the fourth woman to be nominated to a major party ticket, after Hillary Clinton, Sarah Palin, and Geraldine Ferraro. Almost everyone knows who Hillary Clinton is, and most people are probably at least a little familiar with Sarah Palin. But Geraldine Ferraro's groundbreaking 1984 run for vice president may be less familiar to younger people today who didn't live through that election. Ferraro was the first woman to ever run on a major party ticket, and her running mate Walter Mondale's decision to choose her for VP was unprecedented. Despite this pick, the Mondale campaign lost in a landslide, and it wasn't until John McCain's decision to pick Sarah Palin in 2008 that another woman was nominated for vice president by a major party. Even though the Mondale campaign ultimately lost, Ferraro's legacy reaches much further than 1984. On the eve of the 2020 election, when the first woman in U.S. history may be elected to the executive branch, it's worth looking back at Geraldine Ferraro's experience on the campaign trail and how the country reacted to a woman running for one of the most powerful positions in the country. This is Collective Memory, a podcast on history, collective consciousness, and the forces that drive current events. I'm your host, Nick Gatlin. Today, we're talking about Geraldine Ferraro.
I'm Judy Woodruff. Remember when Geraldine Ferraro said, "We opened a door which will never be closed again"? My candidacy has said that the days of discrimination are numbered. Those words, spoken in November 1984, summarize the impact of Geraldine Ferraro's campaign for Vice President of the United States. Ferraro's candidacy, one step taken by women on a long, often difficult road to political power.
Geraldine Ferraro was born to Italian immigrant parents, Dominic and Antonetta Ferraro, on August 26, 1935, in Newburgh, New York. Her father died of a heart attack in 1943, and her mother moved Geraldine and her two brothers to the Bronx, where Geraldine attended Marymount Catholic School. Geraldine was an excellent student, skipping 6th through 8th grade and earning a full scholarship to Marymount College after graduating early from high school. After graduating college with a BA in English, she taught in New York public schools while studying for a law degree during night school at Fordham University, earning a JD in 1960. She recounted later that when she submitted her application to Fordham, an admissions officer said she was, quote, taking a man's place. After graduating law school, she married John Zaccaro, a real estate broker. Ferraro kept her maiden name as a tribute to her mother. She raised their three children while practicing law part-time, and in 1974, Queens District Attorney Nicholas Ferraro, her cousin, offered her a job as assistant DA. She was transferred to the Special Victims Unit in 1975, where she later recalled her time working in the SVU, shifted her political opinions to the left. Ferraro was known as a talented lawyer, but unequal pay and draining work caused her to leave the DA's office in 1978. That year, longtime Congressman James Delaney retired from his seat. Ferraro was interested in the seat, though her public perception as a liberal feminist didn't play well in the largely white, conservative, middle and working class district. Ferraro emphasized her Italian-American heritage and used a law and order platform to ultimately win 53% of the vote in the primary in a three-way race against the establishment candidate and another of Irish descent. In the general election, she defeated Republican Alfred Delabovi by winning the support of House Speaker Tip O'Neill and the local Democratic leadership, as well as continuing her aggressive law and order campaign with the slogan, "Finally a Tough Democrat." She won with 54% of the vote and won re-election in 1980 and 1982. During her time in Congress, Ferraro was a liberal vote from a relatively conservative district. She was still a law and order Democrat, supporting the death penalty and aggressive spending on national defense, and opposing busing to desegregate public schools. But notably, she was a strong voice in favor of abortion rights, upsetting conservative Catholics in her district and elsewhere. She also consistently criticized the Reagan administration's record on economic policy regarding women, stating, quote, "This administration has tried to create the impression that good wives and outstanding mothers are only those who stay at home. I don't disparage that, I did it myself, but not every woman can afford to do that." Ferraro's ability to maintain largely liberal political stances while winning over moderate and conservative voters was noted at the time. Democratic Representative Barney Frank said of her, quote, "She manages to be threatening on issues without being threatening personally." In part because of this, Ferraro quickly rose through the Democratic ranks, being elected Secretary of the Democratic Caucus in 1980 and appointed to the House Budget Committee in 1983. Clearly, Ferraro was a rising star that could help liberal Democrats appeal to white working-class voters in the Reagan years, and she, along with a handful of other women, were being actively considered for another position, one in the executive branch.
Ladies and gentlemen of the convention, my name is Geraldine Ferraro. I stand before you to proclaim tonight, America is the land where dreams can come true for all of us.
In 1984, former Vice President Walter Mondale's campaign against incumbent President Ronald Reagan was not going well. Polls at the time showed Reagan leading by double digits, and one Gallup poll found him up 19 points over Mondale in the June before the election. Reagan's re-election was set to be the biggest landslide victory since Nixon's 49-state blowout in 1972, or Lyndon Johnson's victory over Barry Goldwater in 1964. By all accounts, the Mondale campaign needed some sort of boost to have a chance of winning in November. The campaign believed that choosing a woman to be Mondale's running mate would provide the enthusiasm the ticket needed heading into the election, and began actively vetting many female candidates, including then San Francisco Mayor Dianne Feinstein. It helped that the National Organization for Women threatened to provoke a floor fight at the Democratic convention if Mondale didn't pick a woman. Before the 1980s, it was assumed that women would vote more or less in line with their husbands. By the start of the decade, however, the so-called gender gap, where more men voted for Republicans and more women voted for Democrats, became a studied phenomenon. The president of now, Eleanor Smeal, wrote a book in 1984 titled Why Women Will Elect the Next President, raising awareness of the gender gap and its political opportunities. Feminist groups like Now made the gender gap a national issue, pressuring Democratic lawmakers and organizations to center women's rights in their platforms and policies. And another powerful idea was thrown around in the 80s regarding exploiting the gender gap. Why not put a woman on the ticket?
They call it the women's agenda. And while they aren't in agreement about all of it, they do agree to debate parts of it. The Equal Rights Amendment.
Don Edwards said so, he's been a hero for so long.
Abortion. And laws to protect women and children. They are most clearly divided over issues like abortion, but enough of these women do agree for three strategies to emerge.
That we are placed well within our various houses of the legislature across this country.
I was wondering if you, who have achieved leadership position in
put more women on the ballot,
to whether or not this is a good time for a woman to be running for vice president of the United States.
Push male leaders of both parties to listen to women's concerns.
And I certainly want to be able to interact with the vice president of the United States
and raise more money to support women candidates.
$480,000. Less than 0.25% of my funding for the congressional race came from organized women's groups.
The women have a headline issue, the gender gap. They are hoping the perceived difference between how men and women vote will give them political muscle with the men who run the parties.
We want to talk a lot about the gender gap. We all hear, we can't talk too much about it, right? The gender gap, I've said, is the Grand Canyon of American politics. It is wide, it is deep, and it is beautiful.
Now had asked the Democrats running for the 1984 nomination whether they'd be willing to choose a woman as their running mate, and the idea made national news. Once Mondale won the nomination, the plan evolved. Team A, a team of women's rights activists from groups like the National Abortion Rights Activist League and the Women's Vote Project, met behind the scenes to determine who they thought the best woman would be to run for vice president. They chose Ferraro, someone they thought could embody the symbolic importance of the moment, but could also be a viable candidate. The team made this pitch, quote, "You look at her and you can imagine her as your best friend, as your sister, as your member of Congress, as somebody you want to listen to. She has a profile that many women voters have. She's married, she's a mother, she waited until her kids were older to run for public office, and she comes from Queens, which is a very diverse district, and she has a moderate to liberal portfolio. She's a member of the leadership. The speaker, Tip O'Neill, likes her. Labor unions like her. She's been active on issues for older voters." Ferraro's name was passed around Washington circles during the summer of 1984, and on July 11th, just before the convention, Walter Mondale picked up the phone to offer her the job. For Mondale, usually seen as a cautious politician, the choice was somewhat out of character. The Associated Press wrote of the decision, quote, "It is a high-risk strategy designed to upset Ronald Reagan. For more than a year, feminists have been arguing that naming a woman would, quote, maximize the gender gap, electrify otherwise indifferent voters, particularly women, and give Mondale the boost he needs to overcome what some polls say is now a 19-point Reagan margin." Viewed through this lens, one could argue that the choice of Ferraro was a Hail Mary. Mondale was running far behind a popular incumbent, and choosing a woman was seen as a gutsy move that might shift the margins on the women's vote. Mondale later wrote in his memoir, "I thought that putting a woman on a major party ticket would change American expectations permanently and for the better." Critics at the time, including his own advisors, believed he moved too far to placate, quote, "special interest groups" and, quote, "pro-abortion, pro-lesbian, militant feminists." Maybe Mondale's intentions were genuine, maybe they were motivated purely by political interest. Whatever the reason, Ferraro's place on the ticket was earth-shattering, breaking a tradition of male-only tickets dating back to the first presidential election.
It is a delicate balance that vice presidential candidate Geraldine Ferraro is deftly maintaining. While she came to San Diego County to talk tough about crime, she did it with a sense of humor, a sense of warmth. Unlike her male counterparts, Ferraro must seem strong without being harsh. At the Chula Vista Police Department, for instance, when she chided officials for the lack of female officers.
Tell me about the women in this department. How many women are you?
Five.
Five out of how many?
99.
Oh, yeah, that's not so hot.
But while Ferraro was inside joking about affirmative action, outside, protesters were not joking. Right to life supporters are angry with Ferraro's pro-choice stance on abortion.
It's pro-choice for the woman, but it's no choice for the baby. So, it's murder for the baby.
San Diego is politically one of the most conservative areas in California. It is a military town, a Republican stronghold, an area that by tradition would feel uncomfortable with a woman as vice president. And though this, the 40th senatorial district, is a Democratic stronghold, this is the sentiment Ferraro must overcome.
I'm a little bit redneck that way. I just believe it's a little early yet for a woman to be vice president.
At a meeting of the National District Attorneys Association, more tough talk, tighter gun controls, more help for crime victims. But a telling moment came not from Ferraro, but from State Attorney General John Van de Kamp, who said his young daughter recently admitted she could never be president because that was a man's job. Shocked, the State Attorney General says it represents lost opportunity. It may represent Ferraro's campaign.
Many women were encouraged by this election. Ferraro's congressional office was flooded with 2,000 to 3,000 letters per day, including one from a New York medical worker that read, quote, "While on my way to work this morning, I turned on the car radio and heard what has got to be some of the best news I've heard in a long time. As a matter of fact, I was so overcome with joy for you that I started crying." A Time magazine article written toward the end of the Democratic convention said, quote, "Feminism has scored no more spectacular triumph since women won the right to vote. Even with universal suffrage, American women had enjoyed, until last Thursday, nothing more than the right to elect a man to the White House. With one swift stroke, however, the Democrats have made it possible for women to enter the final phase of their enfranchisement. Win or lose in November, Geraldine Ferraro is now emblematic of the truest, purest facet of the American dream, that every citizen is entitled to an equal chance." The decision seemed to have helped the campaign. Right before the convention, Mondale was trailing Reagan by 6 points. A similar poll taken after the convention showed him up 2, and Mondale stated the race was, quote, dead even. 52% of respondents said the selection of Ferraro made them more likely to vote Democrat that year. Some women weren't as enthusiastic about the decision, however. One woman in Memphis told Time magazine, quote, I'm a liberated woman, but I don't think a woman should be running things in Washington. Some of Ferraro's colleagues, Representatives Lindy Boggs and Pat Schroeder, believed they were more qualified women to be vice president and criticized Ferraro's lack of experience on issues like foreign policy.
I think Mr. Mondale could use all the help he can get.
Do you think a woman's going to help his ticket?
It's not going to harm him any.
Well, I think he made it a little bit too late. I really wish he had decided a little bit earlier. He would have been better off. But I think the one he did choose, he couldn't have chosen a more better woman to represent the vice presidency. I think the woman is clever and very smart, and I think she'd make a good one if elected.
Think of Walter Mondale's decision to choose a woman as a running mate.
Very motivated trying to get the woman's vote, and I don't approve of that at all.
Not at all?
No, not at all, and I won't vote for him.
I think it was a terrific choice. I was rooting for her all the way, and I'm rooting for Mondale.
Well, I think he's hurting himself with the Democratic Party.
Do you really? Why?
Because I think that maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I think most women are not going to want to vote for a woman.
What do you think of Walter Mondale's decision to choose a woman?
Well, I don't think there was any doubt but that he would choose a woman. I think probably Jean Kirkpatrick would have been the best, but she would not have accepted, I'm sure.
Well, I think that you didn't need a woman vice president, and other than it's men all the time.
I think it's far better to have a woman as vice president. I'm glad he selected a woman as vice president, but I think that a woman should select herself for president and run as an independent.
She also faced familiar sexist tropes on the campaign trail, such as when conservative columnist George Will sent her a dozen roses with a note that said, "Has anyone told you you're cute when you're mad?" Barbara Bush, the wife of Vice President George H.W. Bush, said she was a, quote, $4 million, I can't say it, but it rhymes with rich, implying she was only pretending to be a working-class mother. In one Meet the Press interview, Ferraro was asked by the moderator, quote, could you push the nuclear button? And was questioned if she would be Mondale's running mate if she weren't a woman. Perhaps the biggest setback to her campaign, though, was the release of her husband's tax returns. They filed separately. Geraldine had released hers earlier, and John finally decided to release his own after public pressure forced his hand. Though Zaccaro's tax returns did not reveal anything illegal or even particularly bad, their release caused a flurry of media attention, attention on previous infractions, and questions of corruption. When Ferraro tried to brush off the issue, saying, quote, you people married to Italian men, you know what it's like, she inadvertently heightened insinuations that her Italian-American heritage could belie connections with organized crime. Ben Bradley, editor of the Washington Post at the time, later said, quote, I don't think the press would have put that kind of energy into it if we'd been talking about somebody called Jenkins. The issue didn't help the Mondale campaign, which was badly trailing Reagan and lost what little momentum it had after the media uproar. But Ferraro was still a welcome presence on the campaign trail. As one of her staffers recalled, quote, Jerry was a very real, down-to-earth, relatable person. There was no artifice to Ferraro. The October vice presidential debate was a chance for Ferraro to display her folksy stage presence to the world, and she used the opportunity the best she could. Her opponent, George Bush, was the current vice president, ex-CIA director, and former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Ferraro was widely seen as weak on foreign policy, and she prepped heavily for the debate. On one question about suicide bombings at an American embassy, Bush said to Ferraro,
and so I'll leave that one there, but let me help you with the difference, Ms. Ferraro, between Iran and the embassy in Lebanon. Iran, we were held by a foreign government. In Lebanon, you had a wanton terrorist action where the government opposed it.
Let me just say, first of all, that I almost resent, Vice President Bush, your patronizing attitude that you have to teach me about foreign policy. I've been a member of Congress for 6 years. I was there when the embassy was held hostage in Iran, and I have been there, and I have seen what has happened in the past several months, 17 months, with your administration. Secondly, please don't categorize my answers either. Leave the interpretation of my answers to the American people who are watching this debate.
Many on the Mondale team thought Ferraro won or tied the debate, and nationwide, men thought Bush won while women were more split. Bush's press secretary later said, quote, "She's too bitchy," and Bush himself was caught on a hot mic saying he, quote, "tried to kick a little ass last night." On election night, the Mondale campaign lost resoundingly to Reagan and Bush, gaining only 13 electoral votes from Minnesota and D.C., compared to Reagan's 515. This result was largely in line with the polls from the summer, and exit polling showed that Ferraro, like most vice presidential candidates, didn't make a difference with most voters. Mondale still outperformed with women due to the aforementioned gender gap, but it was a Pyrrhic victory. A majority of women still voted for the Republican. In a letter to the New York Times in 1988, Ferraro wrote, quote, "Throwing Ronald Reagan out of office at the height of his popularity, with inflation and interest rates down, the economy moving and the country at peace, would have required God on the ticket, and she was not available." Despite the loss, Ferraro's impact on the American political landscape is immeasurable. The very fact that Kamala Harris, throughout much of the vice presidential selection process, was considered the frontrunner, the expected or safe choice, shows how much Geraldine Ferraro's groundbreaking campaign normalized the idea of a woman being on the presidential ticket. And in both Ferraro and Sarah Palin's campaigns, both were selected in a bid to raise enthusiasm for the ticket. Similarly to Mondale, John McCain lost convincingly to Barack Obama when he chose Sarah Palin as his running mate. Both candidates were arguably set up to fail, where Harris is joining a ticket widely considered the favorite to win. Hillary Clinton, speaking at Ferraro's funeral in 2011, said, "She is seen correctly as paving the way for my political career and those of many other women. We owe her so much. She inspired us women and girls. All of us thought new thoughts and imagined new possibilities because of Jerry. Geraldine Ferraro made it possible for a woman to have a serious shot at the Oval Office, and for that, her contribution to the history of the United States is colossal." This has been Collective Memory, a podcast about history. I've been your host, Nick Gatlin. Special thanks to the New York Times, the Washington Post, NPR, Time Magazine, Smithsonian Magazine, the U.S. House of Representatives and U.S. Senate, and the New York Historical Society for the research used for this episode. Archival footage from CBS 8 San Diego, WTVR CBS 6, and the Democratic Party were used for this episode, as well as the PBS documentary Not One of the Boys, produced by the Center for American Women in Politics. Thanks for listening.